pursuant to Government Code Section 54953E and the state declared emergency, this meeting of the Board of Library Trustees will be conducted exclusively through teleconference and Zoom video conference. The COVID-19 state of emergency continues to directly impact the ability of the members to meet safely in person and presents imminent risks to the health of attendees. Therefore, no physical meeting location will be available. Please be mindful that the teleconference will be recorded as any Board of Library Trustees meeting is recorded, and all other rules of procedure and decorum will apply for Board of Library Trustees meetings conducted by teleconference or video conference. This meeting will be conducted in accordance with the Brown Act, Government Code Section 54953. Any member of the public may attend this meeting. Questions regarding this matter may be addressed to Eve Franklin, Administrative Secretary. The Board of Library Trustees may take action related to any subject listed on the agenda. Okay, can we take attendance, please, Eve?
Amy Ross.
I'm here.
Sophie Hahn.
Present.
Diane Davenport.
I'm here.
Beverly Green.
Here.
And John Soloski.
Present.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is space for public comment on non-agenda matters. Do we have anybody signed up or wishing
Looks
to speak?
Like Kathy Huff. I'll promote her to panelist.
Okay.
Good evening, trustees.
And hi, Kathy.
Hi, and I see we have a number of staff here. It's great to know who's in the meeting. On your consent calendar tonight, I'm pretty excited to announce that we are very much hoping to have the 20th author's dinner back at the library. It has been since February of 2020, and we all know what happened in March 2020. And so it'll be fantastic to be back at the library pending your approval tonight on that consent item. I wanted to let you know it's the 20th dinner itself, and our plan is to, for the health and safety and the psychological comfort of everyone who attends this dinner, is to continue to limit the tables to the same number that we had when we did the outdoor event this past May and spread it out, you know, through the mystery room, the historic lobby, and the historic now fiction reading room. So as well as have the reception downstairs as we usually have. But folks are super excited about making this happen. And a number of staff have approached me unsolicited to say how thrilled they were to have the event hopefully coming back to the library. It's kind of an exciting buzz of a time when the dinner is being organized and planned. A lot happens in the life of the library, and I just so appreciate the staff and all of their help that and their accommodations that they make in order for us to hold this very important fundraiser for the library. It is the single largest fundraiser that we hold for the library, and it allows us to make sizable grants to the requests that the library makes, for especially for capital projects, innovations, and literacy projects. So I hope you agree and we'll vote on that consent calendar tonight, and talk to me offline at any time if you want to hear more details about the plan. But the first thing we have to do is lock in the date before we can get the planning happening.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Has anybody else signed up? I will assume that's
anybody else.
Oh, okay. Sorry, just a second. There. Oh, whoops. Can you guys still see me? I seem to have. All right, doesn't matter. Next are is. Comments from the library unions. Is anybody signed to speak to that today?
I don't see anybody.
Okay. Wait a second. I'm trying to get, let me get my video back. Or, okay. Next would be comments from trustees. So we can go around and do that. If anybody wants to make a comment, now would be the time. Okay, let me see. Ah, there I am. Okay. John, your hand is up, right?
It is. Thank you. I'd be glad to start. excuse me. I want to give a shout out to a couple of staff. I want to give a shout out to all our staff, by the way. You know, they're hardworking. My wife and I go to the tool lending library and the library often, and staff is always really helpful, really helpful. And I appreciate them. My wife and I, Pam and I, also often go to the Saturday market downtown on, is it Center Street? Whatever it is. And we're there early. And Emma Coleman from Central Library, Children's Librarian, is often there walking up and down the market, calling out, story time in half an hour, story time in half an hour. And I just love it. The library has a presence at the Saturday Farmers Market. And I think it's just marvelous. And they go over on the side there in the park, between the park and the farmers market. And there's often 30 or 40 kids there and parents and, you know, guardians. And it's really, really kind of, it's one of those Berkeley things. And it's, I really, thank you, Emma, for doing that. Thank you, library, for doing that. I also want to give a shout out to now I've lost my track. Where are we here?
John, we can come back to you if you want.
Yeah, why don't you come back to me in a minute? Thank you.
Beverly, I see your hand.
Yes, thank you. I just want to thank the staff for taking the initiative to begin the race work, which of one component was a listening session that we had at the last special meeting. So I just wanted to share my appreciation to the staff for taking that initiative on this very important issue. Thank you.
Okay, Sophia's not on my screen. I don't know if she turned her video off. There you are.
I am here.
Okay, I do see you. Do you have is your hand up? I don't see it.
It's not, but I will share that I read a fabulous book this summer. I had a couple of summer reading things, and they were all about cities and great cities. One of them is called Happy City. One of them is called, was it a diary? Hold on, they're right here. Confessions of a Recovering Engineer. And the third is called Palaces for the People. And it has a big chapter on how important libraries are to hold the social fabric of communities together. And it's actually my favorite book of the three. I'm going to actually be bringing something to council that's based on the main theme in this book, which is about social infrastructure and how important it is to have places in a community where people interact and where they feel welcome and cared for. And it talks about how that is more important to a community's well-being than physical infrastructure, and that we often think about a city's job as being, you know, keeping stuff up sewers and, you know, streetlights. And this makes a really compelling case for social infrastructure, of which libraries is considered the gold standard, as really important to health, to community, to democracy, et cetera. I will take this moment to ask the library staff if we actually have this book. You don't have to answer me now, but I am planning on doing a citywide book club to try and get people in Berkeley to read this book. And I'd like to be able to say that we have it at the public library, that we have a decent number of copies. And I was so excited about it that I've reached out to the author, and he has agreed to do a book talk for my book group. So,
great.
Palaces for the people, libraries are emblematic of everything we need in a society. Cities ought to be doing more of what libraries do across the community, and making people happy and helping them fulfill their lives is a core function of government. I highly recommend.
Great. John, are you
ready? My book ready?
John?
I am ready.
Okay.
Thank you. And the second shout out was for another staff member. Well, also, leading into that, I want to thank Tess and our staff for getting Dr. Watson here, as Beverly said, mentioned. It was a very good session a week ago. And I thought there were some really, really good comments and some really, really good ideas that came out of that. And one of them that struck me at the time was Jay Dickerson's comment about our kind of invisible workers, the security staff, the cleanup crew that comes in after hours, and how they're not city workers. They're not part of any unions. They're outsourced. And I don't know this for a fact, but Jay suggested maybe they're traveling from a further distance away. We don't know that. I did email Tess about this. I think it would be a great idea to survey our security staff and our our maintenance cleanup crew. What is it that we can help them with? Because they're not city staff. They don't have an AC transit card. They don't have union benefits. And they are the invisible workers. And that struck me. And I would really like to help them out if we can. And I'm not going to force that in any way, but I think it's worth a discussion about how we can. But I want to hear from them about how we can help them, because I don't want to presume that I know what they need. Anyway, that's it for now. And I really did enjoy the session with Dr. Watson. Thank you, Tess and staff, for putting that together.
Okay. Has everybody made a comment that wishes to? Okay, and we can move on to the consent calendar. There's the minutes of two meetings, the announcement that Kathy Huff made, and the last one is a vehicle for professional services purchase orders. Does anybody have questions or discussions about the consent calendar? Okay, not hearing any. I'll ask for a motion that they be accepted. Jamie,
I apologize, but I do see John's hand.
I'm sorry, John. I don't always notice. Thank you, Tess. Go ahead, John.
No, I was assuming there would be no questions or comments.
Okay.
So I would be glad. Do you want me to move the entire everything on consent, or take it bit by bit?
I think we can do everything on the consent calendar.
I will move everything on consent.
Wait. I'm sorry. I have a question.
Okay.
I'd like to move the Protiviti government services off of consent.
Okay, that's item D, Beverly.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Let's see. Okay, does anybody have any objection to moving that off? Do we need to vote? All right, so let's pass A, B, and C in a block. Can we start with doing that?
I'll second John's motion to do A, B, and C.
Thank you. Can we call the roll?
Amy Roth?
Aye.
Diane Davenport?
Aye.
Sophie Hahn?
Aye.
Beverly Green?
Yes.
And John Soloski?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. So item D, does that become the first item on the action calendar? I'm looking for hands. I'm assuming it does. So shall we do that first? Wait a sec. I have to find it in my packet. Okay. Beverly, do you want to start?
Yes.
Okay.
So I understand there is a need for these services because there are two staff because the department is down two staff and that this is your request is to issue purchase orders using the GSA. I assume that's a state GSA purchasing vehicle. Is that correct? Nope.
No, that's not correct. I'm sorry. I'm happy to clarify too, but I'd like you to finish your comment.
Oh. Okay, so please do. And then I have some other questions.
That's a reference to an existing contract within our general services team at the city of Berkeley. So I just wanted to specify that it's actually an existing contract with the city of Berkeley. And because the city of Berkeley has this contract, we would be able to basically authorized to hire under the contract because it already exists, as opposed to initiating a new process. That was just the distinction I was going to make about GSA.
Okay, thank you. Because when I think of GSA, I think of the state. So this is something like a sole source contract, right? It's not part of a competitive bid, right?
Exactly. It's just because it's already existing. It would allow us to expedite being able to bring people into the team. Should the team determine through our mean confer process with the union that it's a viable solution.
And so do we know whether or not this firm is a disadvantaged business enterprise or a women's business enterprise or a veteran-owned business?
I don't want to speak incorrectly. I think it's possibly not. My sense is that it is not, but I think it would be appropriate for me to confirm that that's the case and then provide that information to all of you just to make sure that it's correct. I do see Diane's hand raised, and I don't know if it relates to the answer to that question or not.
Well, connected to that, is this a union-supported group that they normally go to for in special circumstances like these where we need help quickly?
I will respond to that, but I think maybe we should address the first question, Beverly's, just because it's a slightly different topic. And so maybe we can work through Beverly's question and then return to your question.
Okay, thank you. So I'm interested, the city of Berkeley, and I know if this firm is on an approved GSA list, then this is someone that you can go to quickly. The city of Berkeley has some issues with respect to providing an opportunity for businesses that are run by diverse owners to be able to participate in the economic benefits of doing business with the city. And so it is my assumption that this is not a DBE or a WBE or a veteran-owned business, and that it probably does lack workforce diversity. I also understand the need to move quickly on some services while you are in the process of hiring to replace those two staff. But I do want to register. I do want to register my concern. I won't vote against this contract, or I won't vote against this opportunity, but I am concerned that the city has dollars and that they are not using their dollars to support and do business with diverse owners of companies. Thank you.
Okay. Noted. So Diane, did you have something to add? No? Okay.
I think she had asked a question just before with respect to the degree of union support for the company. I think,
right. Okay.
I just want to clarify a point with respect to the latter, and then I want to return to, I think, the original subject. Under the existing MOU with Service Employees International Union, with the bargaining unit that represents the workers that provide IT services, there is an article in the contract that requires the employer, or in this case, the library, to invite impacted employees to a meet and confer just to discuss potential impacts of contracting. And that is a step that our union representatives addressed, and we will be having a meeting with the IT workers to discuss this. And we'll certainly be taking all of their feedback into advisement, but given that our BOLT meetings are only once a month, and this is a very significant issue that we're about to be trying to manage, I thought that it was in our best interest to make sure that we were able to attain the approval to move forward. The situation that we're in is really unusual. We have an only four-person information technology team plus a manager. We have two people leaving. One of those people is, it's a positive thing. He's basically is being temporarily promoted. And so we need to backfill for his position. And the other person is a staff member that we all have grown to really appreciate. And he's decided to move to a different city. So basically we're losing half our department. This is specialized work. We can't easily train and backfill with other folks. We're looking to fill both of these positions. These will remain bargaining unit positions. One of them will be a temporary position and one of them will be a permanent position. And so I just want to emphasize that this is a very temporary fix to get us through what we anticipate is going to be a hard time. I am concerned about the staff because, again, this is specialized work. There's a lot of work that is scheduled, and we can't easily reduce the amount of work that people do, because this relates to supporting the public infrastructure, supporting the public access computing, and providing all of the back-end work that they do. I think we've had some discussion in some of the meetings about the point that Trustee Green raises and how significant an issue this is in terms of contracting. One of the things I think I've mentioned too is that the City of Berkeley is engaging in a study to better understand how to address some of the concerns that were raised about the percentage, basically, of BIPOC women, veteran-owned businesses as represented as contractors with the city. So I know that that's an effort that's actively underway. And I think that the library also has capacity to look at what we do have control over and make sure that we're doing our due diligence with respect to this, particularly in terms of things like when we hire people to present, when we work with community partners, when we hire people to provide food at events. These are all areas where we could be consistently, I think, reinforcing the value of making sure we're doing that. In this particular case, this is an existing contract. If we were not to go with this firm, we would have to go through an RFP process because the amount of money that we need approval for is too high. And if we go through a request for proposal process, by the time we complete the process, we will probably have worked through the hiring process for these positions. That doesn't in any way, I think, devalue or change the reality that Trustee Green, I think, is acknowledging here with respect to, you know, these are hard choices and, you know, we need to do the right thing. And in this particular case, I am really concerned about our ability to backfill as quickly as possible just to maintain the same level of public service. These staff are also the ones that respond to all of the tickets in terms of when something goes wrong with computers, when something has to be replaced. So again, I just want to emphasize we're down to two people. We are trying to fill these positions. But this is a very temporary approach. And the reason why we're suggesting to do it this way is because this contract already exists. So I hope that addresses the questions, but I certainly understand the feedback that's been raised about this. And I do see Trustee Solowski's hand as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Tess, for the explanation. Listen, I don't want to impede this tonight. It sounds like there's some expediency here that needs to be addressed. And I'm not here to impede the work of our staff or the work of the libraries, but I want to support Beverly. And I think we have to look at what we're doing holistically. We have to look at every aspect of what we're doing. And I agree. Beverly, if that okay, or Commissioner Green, I agree that we need to, I would like a report about where the city is at with our contracting, with diversity of employees, with the contractors, et cetera, if we can get that. And I'm not asking for that next month or even in the next 2 months, but if we can get that in the next 6 months or so, I think that would be really helpful for all of us. Because I don't know where the city is at on this stuff. I really don't. Anecdotally, I have heard the same thing that Beverly has raised tonight. But that's anecdotally. I don't have any data or any real information to back that up. I think it would be helpful if we had that. Thank you.
Beverly's hand was up.
So I am not going to vote against this. I am going to support it because of the urgent nature of the situation. I understand that. And I understand that this is an on-call contract and that you can just, and, you know, that we have the ability to just go with it. I did want to bring this up because people don't. And the city of Berkeley is not doing what it should be doing, given how it professes to be a city that embraces all diversity. There's no secret about that. I do think, in addition to the services that you have talked about, Tess, whenever there is an opportunity, the next opportunity for, you know, construction services, for architecture services, that kind of thing, that we not just go with the firms that are well known in the library industry, because that's always what we've done. I would hope that we would broaden our view and serious consideration, especially given the demographics of where the country is going, even if Berkeley is not going that way, even if Berkeley is going in the opposite direction. So I'm not going to vote against it. I understand what is going here, but I do want to bring that up as something that we should think about in terms of where we're spending our dollars and if we really are putting our money where our mouths are. Thank you.
Sophie?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for bringing this up. This is a topic that I am pretty passionate about, that the city council, primarily Councilmember Bartlett and I, have really tried to move this forward at the city level. Unfortunately, Prop, 208, super racist prop that was passed in California, makes it such that for us to have anything approximating affirmative action in our contracting practices, we have to do a study.
A Croson study. Is that correct?
But the study was done. And it is a point of great frustration for me that we have not moved with any due haste on this. First, there was resistance to doing the study. Then the study took a long time. Now the new policy is taking forever. I mean, it's something that I think we referred 5 years ago. I have also referred an item to allow preferences for local businesses. And that could be local to Berkeley, or it might be the East Bay. That item has also languished. We currently only have preference policies for local businesses for goods, but not for services. And the limit for goods is, I think, $25,000, which was set, 20, 30 years ago, and obviously doesn't represent the right amount. I think I asked for it to be raised to $200,000, and that we add preferences for local service providers as well, whether it's architects, engineers, tech, et cetera. So Beverly, I really appreciate your bringing it up here. I feel like every time we are contracting is a good time to hammer on this and bring it up and shine a light on its importance. We are spending the money that is given to us by the people of Berkeley, and we need to spend it in a way that reflects our values. So I would love additional support and partnership in getting it done at the city level. And I think we could lead here at the library by moving these kinds of things forward more quickly.
Okay, I think everybody's gotten the basic points. We need to fill these positions.
I'd like to just make one more comment. I'm sorry.
Sure, go ahead.
This is just a further explanation, and I need to double check this, but basically the project to analyze equity in contracts at the City of Berkeley, I believe that was gonna be led by the city's EEO diversity officer, and something tragic has happened. That person has actually passed away. And so I think that I would imagine that there is some difficult stuff happening just in terms of figuring out continuity of work with respect to that. That had been my understanding earlier. It's possible that the project had changed hands, but I hadn't heard that. And so I just wanted to mention that as well as context. And thank you both. Thank you both for your comments on that. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I just want to say that is a very tragic happening in the city. This referral was with the city manager before this person was hired.
John, your hand is up.
It is indeed. I will move consent calendar item D, using the GSA vehicle for professional service.
Thank you. Do we have a second? I always feel like I'm not supposed to vote. I'll second John's motion. Can we call the roll, please?
Amy Roth?
Yes.
Sophie Hahn?
Yes.
Diane Davenport?
Yes.
Beverly Green?
Yes.
And John Soloski?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Next is the circulation policy update, and Jay Dickinson is the presenter.
Hi.
There you are.
You can hear me okay? Yep. Okay, good. Well, as you know, we do this frequently, or periodically, I should say, that we look at the circulation policy and find little things that we can fix, improve, always with the intention to make access easier. So in the time that I've been here, we've done things like make circulation periods longer. As you know, we eliminated fines. That was a big deal. We, from time to time, tool with the amount of reserves allowable, which you'll see is on the item tonight, to kind of reflect what's going on in the community and with our service at the time. So we've proposed a few changes here, and I'm just going to call them out. If you have questions, please feel free to ask. Bill, our new manager, Bill Kolb, is here as well, and he worked on this with me. So feel free to chime in, Bill, if I leave anything out. Probably the biggest thing is the tool fines are going to be eliminated now. So we have systematically gone and gotten rid of every fine that we had from, I think, in about 3 or 4 rounds now that we've done this. I think the last to go was the Link Plus fines, and now we feel like it's okay to get rid of the tool fines. We've suffered no huge ill consequences for getting rid of the fines. Haven't seen huge changes in loss or borrowing patterns. And so this is a collection that's a little more high in value. So obviously we'll be monitoring how that affects things, but please keep in mind that if a tool is so long overdue that it goes billed, it will behave like all of our other materials behave, and that it would block a patron from further access. So that's the incentive that we still have in place with all of our materials. And that will be the protection for the tools. People who use the tool library like using the tool library. So I don't anticipate, we're going to see a lot of things walk away from us. Though as a library, we always see some things walk away from us and not come back. So that's probably the biggest thing on the agenda. We've also simplified the tool lending schedule, if you will. This started a few years ago. We used to have a lot of different lending periods. Yeah, you remember, Diane. I mean, 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, $2, $4, $6. So we've just smashed that down to make it a lot easier. The details are there and you can look at them. We've also, I believe this was Bill's recommend, or maybe Tessa's recommendation, that we also just make it a little easier to become a tool library patron. We haven't changed the requirement, but we've changed how easy it is to demonstrate the requirements. So you do have to be a resident of Berkeley to use the tool library, but we really used to make you kind of bring in some pretty hefty documents to prove that. And so we've expanded those documents and things that you can bring us to show that you are indeed living in Berkeley. The last holds adjustment we made was in response to the pandemic and the fact that all of our borrowing was being done through reserves for a good period of time, what were reserves and the, of course, digital assets that we have. We're kind of back up and running now. We're not completely where we were before the pandemic, but I don't know if we know exactly what our services are going to level up to be for the next few years. But at the very least, we don't really have that many people who max out on the holds, but it does actually create a very significant amount of work, especially at some of our specific branches when we have too high a threshold. And quite frankly, that presents a situation where we might not be able to deliver the service as well as we would like. So it needs to be in a manageable number. And so we're just dropping that down to 50, which is still quite high, but also in line with the most of the local libraries here in the Bay Area. Finally, the only other thing I would mention, if you really read this note for note, is that this is like this living document that I feel like I've been working on for 15 years. And so every time I read it, I'm like, what illiterate person wrote this? And keep in mind that I'm the illiterate person I'm talking about. So Bill and I just took some time to tighten up grammar and a few different things like that. So completely superficial changes, but things we're doing to try to make this policy more readable and understandable and frankly concise. So I think with the changing of the rules, the reduction of blocks, things like that, we are coming up with a more and more concise, easy to understand policy that has less blocks in it and a greater access. So the changes we propose here are not massive. They're in line with the things we've done in the past. Bill, do you have anything you want to add if you're close by?
Yeah, I am close by. Hello, everyone. I think you've all officially met me. So I'm Bill Kolb. I'm the new Central Library Services Manager. And I want to express my great appreciation for Jay for allowing me to work with him on this. I think it's been like a good project that we've pulled a lot of various threads together with the CERC policy changes. The one thing that I would mention that we didn't expressly articulate in the documentation was that in addition to no longer assessing fines for tool library patrons, we would like to also purge all of the existing fines that are on the books so that people who previously were being held to account for being a little bit tardy are not being held to a different standard than what we will have going forward.
Yeah, thanks for calling that out, Bill, especially because there is a precedent for that, and the precedent being with each fine that we've eliminated in the past, we did a similar purge. Our thinking being if fines are no longer a thing at the Berkeley Public Library, we've no real need to collect the old ones. One final statement about fines, too, is it's never, Berkeley's really been built on a good model where we have not been dependent upon fines as a major source of income. It has made contributions to the budget over the years, not these days, but it's a pretty minimal impact on us. The big thing again is we'll be monitoring how people use the collection and how casual they become about returning things, which can happen. So we'll watch it closely. Ben, for those of you who don't know, Bill used to be with us, so he's a returning prodigal son type character here. And we're glad to have him back. I really like working.
I came to my senses, yeah.
So I don't know if anybody has any questions. Oh, is your hand up, Amy?
My hand is up. And you've sort of touched on this, but I am interested in knowing, you have plans to monitor whether people are returning their tools and all that stuff, because I would be interested in knowing whether this change has any impact on the use of the library.
Sure. We can compare data. Future data to past data, and that's all available to us at any time. So I could tell you how many things, for instance, were billed last year or something, and we'll certainly watch in the future. One of the cool things about the tool library, at least monitoring it, is that we have such a dedicated and very specific staff working with that collection that there's like really valuable anecdotal data there. I mean, they'll know we lost 3 weed whackers, you know, and so actually, what's the string trimmer, I think was the one, that's what it's called. And we're all like, what's a string trimmer? It's a weed whacker. So yes, by all means, we will watch it. I feel confident every time we've pulled a trigger like this, and we've changed so much since I've been here, including expanded circulation times, expanded renewals, and we've never suffered consequences that really hit us hard. Again, though, you make a good point, because these are a higher value material. Yeah. Some of these things cost hundreds and some are thousands of dollars. So we'll definitely pay special attention. And I will even, you know, I'll run a report maybe in 2 months or something. I believe the changes are effective at the end of the month. Isn't that right, Bill? Should this pass?
So I think we were planning to go into effect at the beginning of next month.
We'll maybe a couple months out from that. We'll take a close look. I don't know whose hand was up first, John or Diane. You're muted. Oh, well, that's because of John. John, or excuse me, Trustee Solowski.
You can call me John, Jay. Thank you.
Pam and I, my wife and I, go into the tool lending library often. The three or four people that work there, they know us after multiple times. I mean, they know our names when we walk in the door. And I'm now Paella John, by the way.
I'll use the
pan. Paella Pan John. Right. If when I walk in the door. I applaud you for doing this and the work you've put into this. I am going to be curious about what the impacts are. And I don't think they're going to be significant, but you know, that remains to be seen. One never knows, right? As you say, material that's worth hundreds of dollars, one never knows, right? I'm actually ready to move the resolution if anybody wants to go there so quickly. But if more discussion is needed, that's fine. But I'll move the resolution.
Okay.
Thank you, Bill. One
comment to you, John, and that is that we always have in every service we offer bad actors. That's just the way it is. But I also want to shout out to the tool library and say, they don't just know you, they know everybody. You know what I mean? Like those guys, that's like a small town store, those guys. And I also think that people who love the tool library, love the tool library. So most of them see it like you do. They want to take care of it. So Diane, did you have a comment or question, or were you just?
I'll second John's motion, given the fact that I think that you're exactly right. One, these changes make great sense. And two, there's such a loyalty to tools and culinary that I just don't think anybody is going to disabuse themselves and abuse this service. It's just too well loved. So thanks for your thoughts on this. Thanks to you and Bill both for your work, and I'll second the motion.
Can I thank you in advance for being receptive and just tell you, we are quite literally running out of blocks to get rid of. You guys should be proud of that. Like, we literally are having trouble finding things at this point that are going to keep people from using the library. So we appreciate that support.
Great.
Amy, I think you are talking.
There, Sophie, your hand is up, right?
Yes, it is. Thank you. So I just wanted to just commend you and the whole library for the continued work to reduce barriers. And this is also an equity issue. We're just talking about equity issues. And as we reduce barriers, we are particularly reducing barriers for people who have not felt welcome in the library, people who are lower income, and where a fine really makes a difference. People who find it difficult to deal with bureaucracy and administration and feel that that is daunting, who are not empowered. And so I'm so glad to know that you're systematically going through the different departments, the different policies that we have, and making sure that instead of having a library designed around the few people who, you know, for whatever reason aren't able to follow the rules, better to have a library designed around being welcoming, around goodwill, believing that most people do want to follow the rules, and that people can function as a society, that we can share resources and be respectful and kind to each other. And that's how most people are. And I think we need to design our world with that in mind, and not with fears and punitive mindsets about who's, you know, who might break the rules. Even with rules, you're going to have people who break them. And then you spend so much time and effort going after them that you forget, you know, how do you invite more people in? How do you create joy in the library? How do you, you know, just all that time and energy going into those few negative situations, it's just not worth it. It's not worth it in the library, and it's not worth it in life. So thank you.
if you'll permit me one more comment, we really are trying to create a circulation policy that's based in compassion, and all honesty. And just so you know, one of my favorite experiences I have, and I have it periodically, is somebody who's coming in, who's been released from prison, whose parole officers told them the first thing you need to do is get a library card. We get lots of cool experiences like that at our library, and more are we creating an environment where people don't feel intimidated to come and have that experience with us. And those are people who are coming in thinking, can I be here? And the answer is, yeah, you can be here. So that's what we're working on.
I just can't thank you enough. The world is full of good people, and that is what we need to embrace in everything we do.
Okay, I do not see anybody else's hand up. There's a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. If there's no further discussion, we could call the roll.
Amy Roth?
Yes.
Sophie Hahn?
Yes.
Diane Davenport?
Yes, Sadine.
Beverly Green?
Yes.
And John Solowski?
Yes, I. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jay.
I think I told you guys earlier, I'm going to have to log off. We're taking my son out for his birthday dinner. So I'm sorry, I have to log off.
Happy birthday to your wonderful, amazing son who does so much good work for Berkeley.
Thank you, Sophie.
Following in his father's
footsteps. I appreciate that.
He's really doing important work in the community.
Yeah, he's a gem. He's a pip. He's my pip. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, next on the agenda, Tess and the bylaws update.
Yes, just when we thought that maybe the bylaws subject was temporarily put to rest, I am bringing this up because Eve actually was quick enough to identify an issue with the bylaws that were adopted. This is really just a procedural issue. It's not really a major concern. And per the bylaws, as they were adopted, any kind of amendment changes to the bylaws must be adopted by a majority vote at any regular meeting of both. So the intent with that language was to make it easy to make changes as we worked through and realized that there were practical things that came up that needed to be changed or adjusted. So the current bylaws basically state, they reference the BOLT having a meeting in August. And this meeting is basically the beginning of the officer election process for BOLT. And I'm proposing that we strike the word August basically and change it to July, just because we do not currently have a meeting in August, which is consistent with the city council's practice and I think has been helpful in terms of allowing for various staff to be able to be away during that window of time in August. So I'm just proposing that we change the language to read July instead of August, basically. The article in question relates to when we provide an information report that reviews the rules for elections. That's all. So we are hoping that you can move to approve this particular change to the bylaws.
I move approval. Amy, I think
you're. I got it. Okay, I saw Beverly first and Diane second. Hands were up, were they not?
I'll second, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, is there further discussion or questions? An emphatic no from Diane. Eve, would you call the roll, please?
Okay, Amy Roth?
Yes.
Sophie Hahn?
Yes.
Diane Davenport?
Yes.
Beverly Green?
Yes.
And John Solowski has left. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, great. That was easy. Next up is the information reports. Are they coming as listed? State of the collection first?
Yes, so we will start with the state of the collection update. And I am going to launch that PowerPoint for us. And I would like to introduce our colleague, Bay Smith, the Supervising Librarian of Collection Services. I just want to extend my thanks to her for her incredibly hard work during her tenure here at Berkeley Public Library. And I'm going to go ahead and launch the presentation.
Hi, everyone. Trustee Hahn, I just want to let you know that we do have many copies of the book you referred to, Palaces for the People. We have 5 copies of print. We also have it in an e-copy, and we also have it in e-audio. And it's available throughout the system.
Thank you so much. That's fabulous. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Hello.
May I please confirm that you can see the presentation?
Yes. Thank you, Tess. Hi, so I want to talk to you about the department that I am the supervising librarian for collection services. Next slide, please. So who we are and what we do. Collection services is responsible for the stewardship of library collections, including acquisition, cataloging, deselection, physical processing, and managing of library materials in all formats. We are a department of 7 staff, including myself as the supervising librarian. We're a mix of support staff who work part-time and librarians as well. And we all contribute to pretty much all of these tasks and probably some more that I've outlined in the slide. So next slide. And I want to talk about first the beginning for selection and acquisition of materials and give you a little background on how it's being done now and what's being done. So we're looking at something that I call centralized collaborative collection development. We have a centralized selection process, but this term is used a lot of the times in consortia because many libraries have to work collaboratively when you're in a consortia to look at what you're purchasing. And we've decided to use it here so that we have a collaboration between the central library and the branches and that we all work together as a system in what we're purchasing and evaluating as well. And you might wanna know how we do coordinate this. So we currently have monthly staff meetings, teens, juvenile and adult services, adult materials is coming on board. And collection staff do attend these meetings and facilitate discussion on purchases and questions and the availability of materials, basically all about collections at the meetings. And we started this last fiscal year and has been continuing into this fiscal year. Currently, for the selection of juvenile materials, we have 8 selectors in the system that are collaborating on the collection for the entire system. For a teen, we currently have 5 teen selectors that are collaborating on that. And for adults, we currently have 8 selectors that are also collaborating on selection of materials. And this is for physical materials and our e-materials that we purchase individually through OverDrive. Okay, we purchase from multiple vendors, national and local. Local, we purchase from bookstores. We purchase mainstream books and indie presses. In order to locate material from indie presses, sometimes they're small presses, but reviews do appear in traditional sources, such as Publishers Weekly, Library Journal, Kirkus Reviews, and Booklist, which we all look at often. We track author events at local bookstores and venues. We track local media coverage, especially Berkeleyside and East Bay Express, for example. We review publisher catalogs physically and online through a website called Edivice. So we do look for those and you can see them in our catalog. We have quite a bit of indie presses. We also, in terms of ebook and e-audio, they have very, as far as Overdrive is concerned, which is our main vendor for that right now, they have multiple lending platforms, and we do purchase across all platforms. And it can be daunting and confusing at times, because you can buy books that you can lease for 2 years. You can buy books that have metered access, where publishers have limited how many checkouts. Sometimes they're 26, sometimes they're more, sometimes they're less. You can also buy one user, one copy. If we choose to, you can also buy unlimited access from these. And as I said, we buy all of our materials across all platforms and all publishers. One of the things that I wanted to just highlight that, you know, we've seen an increase in the cost of e-audio materials. We've also seen an increase recently in the demand for them. I don't know if that's because people are back driving in their cars and want to listen to something, they're back at work. But, you know, I personally have seen the cost of e-audio start out high, but at this point, we were looking at a title this week, I can't remember which one it was, but it was $139 for one copy. So, you know, we do evaluate that, but we do have requests. And that brings me to the next, patron requests. A lot of our purchases are driven. We have a suggested purchase in our catalog that patrons can submit, and it's for all materials. They can request books, DVDs, CDs, as well as e-materials. And we will place a hold for that. We will buy we purchase the book. And once we purchase the book, they get a hold placed on it, except for e-materials. We can't place the hold for them because of how you access the material. But the hold is placed and the title is available for other patrons to see and place holds in the catalog. Also, some of our selection and acquisition, of course, can be driven by holds. We have ratios, and when we reach a certain amount of holds and only have a certain amount of copies for all of the materials, we will order more. Next slide, please. One thing I do want to just give a little example in the previous that we had several requests from patrons through our contact us form during the last year that they were waiting a very long time to get their e-materials. And we did some research, we looked on that, we allocated more funds, and we brought the hold ratios down quite a bit, and we no longer have that complaint. So we are very reactive, and we listen to when we hear from community members about access to materials. So I also want to talk a little bit about our selection practices, what drives us besides the last slide. Community demand and interest is extremely important to us. The currency and the relevance of the content. We look at reviews, and this is for all material in professional publications, magazines, newspapers, blogs, and other media. We also look at the relationship of material to existing materials in the collection. We look at the usefulness and endurance of an item's format, the accuracy and depth of the content, local interest, whether it's subject, author, or publisher. We look at diversity of viewpoints and cultural perspectives, and we have for the past almost quite a while now, we have been looking at our selection through a DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion lens. So we have been adding quite a bit for us. And as mentioned before, there are several other review publications that we look at, Booklist, which wasn't mentioned before, Hornbook, also Publishers Weekly, Kirkus, Library Journals, School Library Journal, and the New York Times Review. And we also look at cost and availability. Next slide, please. And then the next process in the life cycle of library materials is deselection. And why do we deselect? And so deselection maximizes a collection's usefulness and ensures that the collection continues to support the needs and wants of the community. The content of library materials should be accurate and up to date. Materials that are superseded by newer, revised, or updated editions may be deselected. The criteria that we use, we look at physical condition, we look at duplicates, has to do with space sometimes, completeness, accuracy, usage, format obsolescence, and relevancy of material. I also would like to add that we have guides that we go by. We use our draft collection management plan when we're looking at deselecting of materials, and we also use the CREW manual, which has been around for a long time and is a publication of the Texas Library Association, which helps with that. We also have changed the deselection process. So librarians, along with the selection process, librarians, supervising librarians, whether they're selectors or branch managers, they're now responsible for the entire life cycle of the materials, from their selection to their evaluation to their deselection and eventually replacing or refreshing and of the collection. And this is a change from before. When I first started at Berkeley Public, the life cycle of the collection was fragmented. The person selecting may not have been the person that was evaluating or weeding. And I think this makes for a much stronger collection and also gives the librarians agency over the collection at Berkeley Public Library. Next slide, please. So how do we know, statistics might help us monitor what kind of job we're doing? And so, but they're only part of it. And so here's a slide that is looking at our circulation statistics, print and e-resources starting in 1718, which was a full year, all the way up to last fiscal year was when we opened the library to patrons in August of 21. So as you can see that last year when I did present, we were actually equal in e-resources and print. And this year, we have quite an increase in our circulation of print resources and a decrease in our e-resources and our full circulation with e and print is now over 2 million items this year. It's 2,116,610,000. So I am really pleased with that number. And so there are some other metrics that we use to see if what we're purchasing is the right thing, not just the amount of checkouts. So we can compare ourselves to our peers, and the peers are libraries that have a similar service population, number of branches, number of circulations, number of staff, et cetera, and across the country. And one of the things that is always interesting to libraries is the turnover rate. And a turnover rate is determined by dividing the number of circulations by the number of items in the collection. So this fiscal year, which I'm pleased to say, the peer turnover rate nationally for our peers is 2.68, and the Berkeley Public Library turnover rate is 3.3. So that is that for the books that circulate, they're circulating three times. And nationally, it's under that. So I was pleased to see that. Next slide, please. So this is just some more statistics for you to see the size of the collections and some of the work, not all of the work, but some of the work that the collection staff has done over the past couple of years. So in fiscal 1920, which was a hybrid year, we closed for the pandemic in March of 20. We added over 44,000 items to the collection. In fiscal 2021, it was less. There were supply chain problems. We added 39,000. This year, we're back up again for fiscal 21-22. We added 42,706 items. And that is that everything comes through collections. We open everything up. We check everything in. We process some items. We catalog some items. We send them downstairs to be sent. We fill the holds. Lots of work goes into that. For the E items, so in fiscal 1920, we added 10,812. Because of the demand in fiscal 2021, we added 15,242. And fiscal 21-22, we added 13,300 items. So that's just a little bit of statistics for the actual work. Next slide, please. So I want to talk about some things other than what is our normal acquisitions work. It's actual work on the collection and what we've been doing with the print collection and where we're going. So before the pandemic, we had talked about looking at, you know, evaluating the collections, and we decided to look at the biography collections across the whole system, and that is in adult, juvenile, teen, graphic novel, audiobooks, print books, DVDs that were classified, and they were classified in many different ways, and it was very difficult for shelvers, it was difficult for patrons to find them, it was difficult to access them in the catalog. So we undertook a project where we collection staff actually went to the branches and we reclassified all of the bios at a branch in the bib record. Staff went out there, relabeled, put new labels on them because they had a new call number on them. Some of them were recalled to circulation, to collections, and we had to relabel them. And we went branch by branch by branch with our collection staff doing that. And then we also, the librarians at the branches evaluated. They had money to replace and refresh their collections. At the central library, the adult bio collection was over 9,000 items. I can tell you that we looked at every single item in that collection and evaluated it and reordered and replaced what we could. The whole project throughout the system was touching over 14,000 items in the system. And this, we also looked at biographies that were on the fifth floor. And we deselected all of the unauthorized biographies of stars, actors, and that is a recommended thing to do, and replace those with the authorized biographies when we could do that. So, and that work, we had librarians from Adult Services helping us with that. So, and keep that in mind that was going on the same time that we were doing our regular work of receiving the normal materials. Then also with the renovation of the first floor and the second floor at the main library, we had collections to move, and we worked with the circulation and Adult Services, and we moved the fiction genres, and that is adult fiction, sci-fi, romance, and graphic novels. Graphic novels got its own living room. The first slide on the top up here, that's the biography section. And then the bottom slide is the reading room. The fiction section was completely reshelved and evaluated. And if you've been there, you'll see that there are no books on the top or bottom shelf for ease. And the shelves are basically 3/4 full, much easier to see the material. We've had a lot of positive comments from patrons about that room. We also, prior to the pandemic, did an opening day collection for the new teen room that's on the first floor. And we had to hold that until the room was completed. And we helped with shelving that with support services with that as well. We also worked on cataloging the backlog of the international language materials. As I previously said, there were over 300 volumes that needed to be cataloged. We updated our vendor processing specifications. We also worked on branch projects. Last year, when we had that horrible rain, the roof at Claremont gave way and basically flooded their teen section. And we reordered almost all of the teen materials. So they got all new teen materials for that collection. And collection staff over the past year has gone out to the branches and has helped reconfigure and move collections in the branches, specifically at North Branch Library. We helped reorganize the children's collections and the adult collections for the opening of the building. We also added many e-resources to the collection. As I mentioned before, press reader, Consumer Reports digital edition, which was driven by the community, the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Bay Area Consumer Checkbook is digital. We did BrainFuse, which is a tutoring software to help students. In terms of juvenile collections, we updated the juvenile Spanish language collections. We had some response from patrons that we didn't really have a collection of Spanish juvenile graphic novels. So we looked at that, and we had some children's librarians do some selection from a new vendor, and we added Spanish graphic novels to our juvenile standing orders. And I will say that they are circulating well, and our patrons, we've gotten some really good feedback for that. We've also been at, we added culinary tools. We ordered some, we added some international culinary tools last year. And finally, one of the things that we did, and I'm really happy to say that they are launching on Friday. And today before I left, we sent them to all the branches, is the Conscious Kits. And that was a foundation grant. Thank you so much for a pilot project that I have been working on, and RJAG staff with Sheila Liu, who is a new children's librarian at North Branch. And it's a book discussion kits on racial equity, identity, and social justice. They're geared towards preschoolers age 3 to 5 and their parents and caretakers. Each location will get 5 kits with 3 books each in them. So we're really excited about that. Next slide, please. Okay, upcoming projects that we're looking at. We're looking at a system-wide diversity audit for the whole system. And that will be a very large project, working with RJAG on that. And so that's coming up. We're also looking at updating subject headings for outdated subject heading Library of Congress. We have started to do a little bit of that, but we'll be doing more. As we go through the print collections, which is our goal this year, is to look at all of the print collections throughout the whole system. We will probably reclassifying them. We'll be looking at graphic novels to make it easier, findability and discoverability, much like the bio project. We're also looking at various Dewey headings that have undergone some changes, for example, in the 300s, 305.6, 306.8, among them. All of these classes, they organize materials according to racial identity, language, nationality, and ethnicity. And they've all undergone numerous changes in the 23rd edition of the Dewey Decimal DDC. And they all have specific instructions suggesting alternative classification numbers. So we will be looking at that as well. As we make changes to our collection, we will be updating our vendor processing specifications. And as I said, we're going to continue to work on the print collections, evaluating and assessing them. And we will also be focusing on our international language collections. In our recent hire, we've hired an adult services librarian and somebody in the collections department who are taking on the selection and the life cycle of the adult Spanish collection, as well as we had requests from patrons for adult Spanish graphic novels, which we did not have a collection of. And we are starting to collect in that area as well. And I believe that is my last slide. Next slide, please. Thank you so much, and happy to answer any questions if you have any. Diane,
yeah.
May, what would you think the ratio is between copies that you make multiple orders of copies and single copy orders?
I could get you that number. I don't have it. It depends on you know, and that's something that I can get for you, Diane.
And are the single copies basically in unique areas of the central library, would you say?
That may have been, but no. Sometimes mm-hmm. single copies are at the branch. It all depends.
Yeah.
We've been diversifying quite a bit and not mm-hmm. just yeah. adding single things to central. There may be something where it works with the collection that's at Claremont or it right. works. So that's what we've been doing. And it's been slow going, but I think we've mm-hmm. made some progress with that.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Beverly's hand is up.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for that. And thanks for the comprehensive kind of evaluation and selection process. So you've mentioned some general audience sources for reviews like the New York Times and Kirkus. Do you check ethnic, or what diverse sources do you check to make sure that that you're finding things not in addition to just general audience sources?
We check online, we check Bookshop, we check Book Riot. I look at Black Girl Reads. I look at various other, you know, websites for that. But we are looking at that. We do have one of the tools that we use, and that's part of the diversity audit. But we do look at Collection HQ, which has a DEI tool in it. So we are using that, and we're trying to look at how we can use it in a better way. We're just at the very beginning of doing this. I will say that we used this tool when it was launched a year and a half ago. And that was before we had a concerted effort of ordering BIPOC and diverse and looking through this lens of ordering. And I believe we were at 16.5% over the whole collection diversity. And we just ran it last week and we were at 22.5%. So we are making progress. We need to do more. But we are doing that.
I don't see any other hands. I'd like to say, Bay, thank you for that very interesting and comprehensive report. And it's obvious that you have gotten a lot done in the collections, and there's plenty to do, I'm sure, but the amount of work that was accomplished is impressive.
See. Thank you very much.
You are welcome. Mm-hmm. I think next on the agenda is the update on summer reading.
Yes, I just wanted to say that unfortunately we were just notified that our senior librarian Erica Glenn, who would be presenting on this topic, is unexpectedly not able to present tonight. So we will need to put this on next month's agenda. Erica is a fantastic librarian, and I know that you'll enjoy talking with her when she's ready to present, and we do apologize for that.
No problem.
No worries. Okay. Tess, you are up next about nominations for board president and vice president.
Thank you very much. I will keep it brief. So because we were not able to review the process in an information report with the board in the month of August, because we didn't assess that correctly. I'm just going to briefly summarize what the process is in terms of nominations for president and vice president of the Board of Library Trustees, and also just explain that this year, basically, the process will be delayed by a month. So generally, and it would be in July of each year, I would just provide an information report summarizing the process and calling that nominations be made at the September board meeting. And again, because this is the September board meeting, we will plan on making nominations agendized on the October Board of Library Trustees meeting this year. And I just want to review that trustees may nominate themselves or others for consideration, and that these will require a motion but no second. And this is just per the bylaws that were adopted. And then we would actually be having at the November meeting, we would agendize two separate action items, one for the election of the office of president and one for the vice president. So that's slightly different than what I believe we've done in the past 2 years, because I think we had done it at the same meeting, but per the bylaws that we adopted, the call for nominations is going to happen in one meeting and then the actual election will happen in the next meeting. So I just wanted to clarify that again, the call for nominations will happen next month, and then we'll have elections the following month. And I want to ask whether anyone has any questions about this.
I don't see anybody's hands. It seems pretty straightforward. Okay, next is the Library Director's report.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be back to have a regular meeting with everyone. I do really appreciate Bay and the team's work on collections. I know she said that there are seven people, but I just want to say it again, there's only seven people and they're collaborating with staff around the system, but it is a lot of work. And it's been really crazy during the pandemic, because there's all these different things that have come up in terms of unanticipated supply chain issues, and that's really impacted the timing and knowing when deliveries are going to come in and all of those types of things. I wanted to say really briefly that the staff is working very hard to restore our regular operating hours. This is a strong concern in the community. The community is very interested in making sure that our hours return to normal. They want to also have access to our fifth floor. This is very important, because obviously having evening access is an equity issue as well. And it's an important value that people have access to the library regardless of when they need to work, just making sure that we're as flexible as possible. Now, of course, all of this was hinged upon our ability to recruit, because what was preventing us from reopening these service points and extending the hours has been a shortage of staff. And I'm just incredibly proud of all of the staff in the library, because of course it's the same set of people that are involved in a lot of these different recruitments. And people have been very busy this month with interviews. It's been very intensive. I want to just invite our associate HR analyst, Mai, to provide you with a brief summary with some actual numbers in terms of the recruitments that she was leading and managing this month, just because it's really impressive and I want you to have more specific information. So Mai, if you're ready to chime in here, I'll turn it over to you for a minute.
Hi, everyone. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So recruitment updates. I am currently working on sending out a slew of promotional offer letters and offer letters out. We'll just start. I'm just going to go down my list. The first one that we did have recently is the library specialist 2 position. We currently have 7 vacancies. I have sent out 5 internal promotional offer letters. I have 2 that is pending right now, waiting for those signed offer letters. They take some time. And then the next position we have is a library assistant, which we currently have 8 vacancies within the library department. We have already gotten back 3 internal signed off, 3 internal signed promotional offer letters. And I still have 5 pending offers. I do not have a doubt that they're not going to be signed. So fingers crossed, by the end of this week, we would have all 8 signed promotional offer letters. The next one would be our library aides. We currently have 3 vacancies. We were working on a eligible list at the beginning of the year. That list has expired. So we currently have a new recruitment that I am working on finalizing and getting a eligible list so that we can start hiring. My goal is to be able to start interviews towards the end of September, early October, depending on how long it takes us to get it all posted. And with all of the promotions that were happening for the specialist and the assistant, we will have more library aide vacancies and also more library assistant vacancies because we were having a ripple effect. But it's great because we're promoting from within and we're moving people up. But it just means that we have to hire more and go off the eligible list, but at least we have a list to go off of and not having to hold our vacancies. And this will help with our reopening plans in the coming months. And we do also have our Deputy Director of Library Services underway. We are setting up interview times to kind of like get that situated. So I'm hoping in the next couple months we'll have something to announce. Maybe in like 2 months, I'm not sure. And we currently have 2 open recruitments for the assistant HR analyst position and also the supervising librarian position. We have 2 vacancies, 1 at Tahira Pittman South and also West Branch, that we are working to fill permanently. And those recruitments do close September 16th. It's next Friday. Yeah. So once they close next Friday, and hopefully in the next couple of months, we'll be able to start interview process and have more staff members. And we do have a few more upcoming recruitments that I will be working on towards the end of the year. And it is the information system specialist, mail service aide, senior librarian, and the library specialist 2, library specialist 1. And we still have our building maintenance mechanic recruitment that's going to be coming up as well. So that is my recruitment update. And sorry if I spoke really fast, it's just really hot in this house.
I see Trustee Green's hand, and I don't know if it was related to recruitment, but please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just curious. So what sources do you use to get recruits?
So it depends on the position. A lot of times I like to do my own outreach. So I go through the housing authorities, the local community centers, the local job boards that we have in the surrounding communities. I work with local community colleges. I work with CSUs in the surrounding areas. I do post also on UC Berkeley, some of the United, the universities in the area, specifically the ones that do have for the specialist assistant and the aide, since they did not need like a specific library background, I kind of like did a wide cast and reached out to all of my connections, especially with like local community groups that do help with youth and trying to get them a job. And then I also reach out to local community college counselors, job counselors, and then have them also spread the word for me as well. And they get all posted on their local job boards.
So do you work with, I think, Amy, to push it out on social media?
I did not for these recruitments because we had such a huge turnout for the librarian recruitment. I didn't think we needed the social media because we were looking for targeted groups. And I specifically targeted certain communities to put our job to put our jobs on their job boards.
Within the librarian profession, one thing that's really interesting is sort of under the American Library Association, the umbrella group, there are different caucuses. So there's Reforma, which is the Association of Librarians that serve Spanish speakers. There's the ALA Black Caucus, which is specifically made up of Black or African-American identifying librarians. They're basically affinity groups representing many different ethnic and cultural groups, and they have specific job boards on each of their sites. And so it's interesting because we can post on the generalized American Library Association job board, but we can also push these announcements for specific jobs that then get they get packaged into the digest or listserv of these various groups, because each of the groups has its own listserv. Being librarians are very highly organized. So this is just specifically about librarians and how we recruit or how we promote opportunities within these different communities of librarians. That I think what Mai was referencing was more sort of the positions that don't require the Master's of Library Information Science degree. And so it's interesting because the outreach strategies in order to reach a more diverse pool of candidates are very different depending on which type of position it is. And sometimes we also have to use just basic networking tools like LinkedIn, right? I'm not sure if you mentioned that, Mai, but in some cases that's actually an effective strategy when a person may not have considered applying for the job, but trying to be more proactive in terms of reaching people that have the background or the qualifications that we're looking for, that strategy can be helpful too.
Yeah, I would just encourage you to take advantage of the resources that are actually inside and to push that out through social media, which is not as targeted, but people know people. And then if Mai has a community-based organization and Amy has a community-based organization list, I wonder what kind of overlap there is. And I would just encourage you to cast a wide net.
Thank you for the feedback. And Mai, I think that you captured all of the active recruitments. I'm pretty sure it's difficult because it is quite a list, but as I said, we've been really active. Going back to the report, really just to conclude the report, it was very exciting for us to have our first in-person all staff meeting. If you can believe it, I am now coming up on my 2-year anniversary with Berkeley Public Library. So I believe my anniversary date is maybe September 23rd. And it's kind of incredible to me that it took basically almost 2 years for us to be able to have an in-person meeting of staff. And of course, we still made sure that it was a virtual opportunity as well, so that our IT team was able to make it a hybrid opportunity so that people could log in on Zoom and they could also be outside at the Terea Hall Pittman South Branch parking lot. And it was just so exciting. It felt like we all had normal, sort of normal jobs again for a second. And it was really lovely because there were all of these new staff that we'd hired. Many of them were able to be at the meeting and actually meet their colleagues in person. And it was really quite special. And as we were having our meeting, this man rode by on his bicycle. He shouted out, "I love the librarians," during the middle of the meeting. It was very funny, but also really sweet. And I do want to mention that, you know, our concerns around COVID and the pandemic persist. I think that you probably saw in my written report that we basically had the same number of reported positive infections in August and July. Of course, we're waiting to see what occurs with September, given that we're hearing that local infection rates are dropping. And I'm feeling hopeful about that. But I think it was it was challenging to continue to manage this summer, and I think continues to impact people in different ways, and we remain cognizant of those issues around safety. And we're very excited to be hosting Dr. Watson, who Trustee Green mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, coming to do our in-person staff trainings on September 23rd and September 30th. We're thrilled to be launching that training. I know that it's really the first step in a lot of training and discussion. We're excited that the trustees may be able to attend one of those training dates. The trainings will be in person and they will be indoors, but we're holding them in our largest spaces, and we'll be using tools to amplify and make sure that people can maintain distance between each other. So that's very exciting. And then on the cohort of staff that is not participating in the in-person training, we'll have an opportunity to do a lot of other trainings relating to communication, which is one of our goals, to continue working on internal and external communication and making sure that people have the skills that they need, and that in all levels of the organization, communication is effectively moving throughout. And we also have some other trainings upcoming. We recently had a bystander training to help staff address incidents that occur and sort of help protect their coworkers when someone is being targeted, for a particular reason, whether it be racism, sexism, homophobia, trying to give staff tools to learn how to interrupt interactions like that. We'll have another bystander training from a different organization in October. We also have some training scheduled around implicit bias, around resilience, which I think is really important for anybody in public service positions. I believe it's an anti-harassment training. No, I'm sorry, it's an incident response training. Apologies. So we are continuing to look at these different types of issues that are impacting staff in the public service environment and trying to focus on different tool sets to help them. Diane, did you have a question or a comment?
Do each of us need to check in with Eve and say which of the trainings we want to come to? That's my first question. And my second is, are we, given what Beverly said in Myers' report, are we beginning to track, when we get a pool of applicants in, what the racial breakdown is of those applicants that apply, and then what is the racial breakdown of those who get hired and whatnot? It feels like it's time for us to sort of track that to see if what we're doing is improving the percentage of people of color and sexuality and whatnot that we get in our hiring system. Thank you.
Two really important questions. The first is, yes, we will ask for Eve's help in following up and making sure that we know which date is your preference. So thank you for clarifying that point. Something interesting about the City of Berkeley hiring practices, since I've been at the city, I've seen that they collect this data with respect to race and ethnicity with every recruitment. And actually there's a approval process that each department has to go through. We of course are unique because we have an HR analyst, and not every department does, but we actually have to get approval in terms of the assessment of the diversity of applicants before we can proceed with the recruitment, which is really interesting. Yeah, and that's something that has happened consistently. But I think that the question about, you know, to what extent does it continue to be tracked? I believe it actually continues to be tracked by the City of Berkeley, and I do think that they have some demographic data that they're able to share in a generalized way. But I think that one of our goals internally is to make sure that we are tracking as much as possible so that we can generate our own reports and analysis around this. And I agree, the point is to demonstrate accountability toward the goal. And going back to some of the conversations we have, we know that some of the work that we have to do to improve the culture is qualitative in terms of, addressing culture of anti-racism and addressing white supremacy, but then the other piece of it is the numbers and the contracting with minority or women-owned businesses, and also things like actual numbers of people being hired and whether or not there are changes there. So I think my answer to you is, yes, this information, I believe, is already tracked on some level at the city, but we would like to improve our own internal documentation so that we can make these assessments more quickly and just make sure that it's as accurate as possible. I'm sorry, that concludes my report. Were there any other questions or comments?
I do not see anybody's hand up. So does anybody have, all right, we've already said that we'll get the summer reading update next month, hopefully. And are there other items that people would like to see added to the next or upcoming agendas? Let's see. Diane?
I'd just like a little bit more report on the opening of art and music and whether we found, you know, among the new librarian hires, people who had background in that area and sort of where we are. Have we paid attention to that a collection all along? And are we comparing it to museum openings and operas and whatnot now? Sort of how do we stand in that area and what does the timeline look like? Thank you.
Thank you. That's helpful feedback in terms of what would be helpful to report on. In addition to the summer reading report, we will also have an adult services department report, which has been postponed a few times. And we just want to continue along with our department reports.
Yeah.
I also heard Trustee Green just indicating that an update in terms of where the city of Berkeley is in terms of the status and analyzing contracting would be helpful. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that we really get the information. So I don't know if it will be next month, but we're committed to getting more information about that. We also need to schedule our retreat. Because during, I believe it was the last month's meeting, we had committed to a plan to have a special meeting where we could explore the role of the board in a little bit more depth. And so I will be following up with the president and vice president about the proposal of some dates so that we can move forward with scheduling that special meeting, hopefully in the later fall.
I just want to say that I'm finding these departmental reports really useful. I mean, I just kind of feel sometimes that I don't have all the information about what goes on in a daily basis in the library. And these are very, very helpful to me. So I'm really glad. I know there a ways back, that used to be a common thing to get a departmental report, but then there was a drought, if you will, for quite a while. So I'm glad to see that they're coming back. They're really great. Okay. Anyone here? Wait, let me lower my hand. There we go. I don't see anybody else's hand up. We could have a motion to adjourn.
So move.
So move, Diane. I'll second. And Eve, would you call the roll, please?
Amy Roth?
Yes.
Sophie Hahn?
Yes.
Diane Davenport?
Yes.
And Beverly Green?
Yes.
John Solowski is absent.
Okay.
Good night, thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.